Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Russ Terry, founder and CEO of Life Coach Radio Networks. Today's sponsor is Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free audiobook when you sign up for a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. That's audibletrial.com/lifecoachradio. And now, here's today's show.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. Hey, Rebecca.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Jen.
It's so good. We are so excited to be here tonight, as we are every second and fourth Monday of the month here on the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. We have the longest running show on Blog Talk, or on the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, of our solo hosts. So we're really excited about that. And tonight, we are super happy to be joined by a very, very dear friend of ours, the Reverend John Russell Stenger, who is the Executive Director of Parity, an organization in New York City. And we're going to ask John Russell to give us more information about that. But just so you know who we are, I am in private practice as a spiritual director and life and leadership coach, working out of Geneva, Illinois at the present time. And my co-host, Rebecca Stevens. Rebecca, introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen. And I'm also just really thrilled to have John Russell here. And I am the I'm a seminary student at Union Theological Seminary in the city of New York. I'm currently sitting in my little dorm room on campus. And so I will start my second year of seminary in the fall. And also, I am a musician and a songwriter. And so I'm doing some little song and dance things around the city in the next few weeks. But anyway, that's my story. That's what I'm doing. And welcome, John Russell. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We are so thrilled, and this is so exciting to have you come and talk about your work. And I just want to, before we get started, lift up a prayer for the folks in McKinney, Texas. And if you haven't seen the video, the police brutality that occurred there over the weekend, you know, I just encourage folks to be aware of what's happening around in our country. And I pray, and I think we can all just pray that you know, this cycle and this system of violence towards people of color can end, and that we can have a world where folks are treated equally and just, no matter how they look, who they are, where they come from, and all of those things. So prayers lifted, and I just want to say again, welcome to John Russell. And John, I would love if you would start. Oh, Jen, do you want to give the
I was about to cut you off, but now I don't have to. So amen to what you shared, Rebecca, and we certainly lift that up. And we would love to have your input into this conversation. And in case you haven't noticed, Rebecca is not a native of New York. She doesn't sound like a native of New York. And absolutely, and John Russell, even though he lives in New York, also doesn't sound like a native of New York. Rebecca's a native of North Carolina, and we're going to talk about John Russell being a native of Texas in just a few minutes. But as I said, if you want to join our conversation, our guest call-in number is area code 646-716-9397. That's area code 646-716-9397. Now, Rebecca, I am happy to turn the floor over to you and your question for John Russell.
Well, I want to, so John Russell, I'm going to briefly introduce you, but then I want you to expand on what I'm saying. And John, you are a reverend. You're in the Presbyterian USA church, and the way that I always introduce you to people is that you were the first openly gay person to be ordained in the state of Texas in the Presbyterian Church. Do I have that right?
Yes.
I just think that's like, it's so rock star. It's just real, real rock star. And now you work with Parity. You're the executive director of the organization Parity, which is a Presbyterian organization. Can you tell us how you got to New York? What, and maybe even a little bit about your discernment process with ordination and how that all came about?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Well, first, thank you both for having me. It's so wonderful to be here. I have friends who have been on the show, and so yay. It's really exciting to be, you know, one of the guests. And so, yeah, I'm really appreciative to be on it. And yeah, so I went to the eye doctor today. And I walked in, and the technician saw me, and the first thing she said, because I was wearing a short-sleeved shirt, and she asked me about my tattoo immediately, which is from, it's an illustration from the children's book, The Story of Ferdinand, which is a book from the 1930s about a bull that grows up on a bullfighting farm in Spain and would rather smell the flowers, essentially, than fight.
I have to say, John Russell, that anybody who has seen the movie The Blind Side more than once,
yes,
will know the story of Ferdinand the Bull.
Mm-hmm. I forgot. I have only seen it once, but it was my favorite children's book before The Blind Side existed.
No, it's a wonderful, wonderful story, and I don't think many people knew about it before The Blind Side. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you go on YouTube, you can watch the Disney short from like the 40s, I think, which is a word by word. And it's kind of absurd and goofy. So I have an illustration of the bull, and she, which I can talk about more because it kind of there's reasoning behind why it's on my arm. But she saw it, and we talked about tattoos, and then later she said. Oh, I explained that the placement was so that if I'm ever wearing long sleeves, it's something that's kind of more formal, you don't see it, which was kind of important to me in my career. And she said, oh, what do you do? And I thought, oh, I put, you know, I set myself up for that one.
Oh, yay. We all love that question. So what do you do for a living?
Right. And I said, well, I'm actually a Presbyterian minister, but I run a nonprofit. I said we do a lot of outreach to youth, and I kind of keep it general, you know, as much as I can, because when you don't know who you're talking to. And then we had this great conversation as she like poked, you know, the pressure thing on my eye. She was talking about how, you know, people want to tell her what Jesus looks like. And she said,
oh, wow.
And she was an older Black woman, and she was explaining, she said, I don't care what he looks like. He is for every one of us, and God has no race. And I said, I love what you're saying, but I hate what you're doing to my eye right now. but it was just such a lovely reminder of this like strange little world I inhabit as a minister who doesn't serve a congregation but runs this nonprofit. And so, and to tell you a little more about that, the name is Parity, Parity, not Parity. Mm-hmm. So that's not a bad thing either. We were started in 1997 to really work to reform the Presbyterian Church USA around their policies that kept lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people out of serving in ordained positions in the church, so as ministers, as elders, as deacons, and then also around same-sex marriage later on. And so as we came to the end of that work, we really shifted our focus around becoming more ecumenical and focusing on doing outreach to LGBTQ youth, to people who are discerning or seeking ordination, and then to cultivating a new worshiping community that worships in Brooklyn, which is called Not So Churchy. Mm-hmm. And the way that I got involved originally was that I was down in Texas in Austin doing my Master of Divinity in seminary. And I was in my, second year, and I had actually only been, you know, out really for a year, and I had heard about this retreat for people seeking ordination in the PCUSA that were LGBT, and I thought, oh, I'm not seeking ordination because I'm terrified to, but that's interesting. And so this was the organization at the time called Presbyterian Welcome that ran this retreat, and so I got to know, at a meeting, I got to know Mika Vandersall, who is the previous executive director and my mentor and one of my closest friends, and one of the two of your closest friends. And so I met her, and I said, I have to come to this retreat. And then I went to the retreat, and I heard her story, and I said, I need to learn to do what you do. And it was, that was a turning point for me, because before meeting her, you know, so back to the bull on my arm, I grew up on a cattle ranch in rural Texas. I mean, like, people have this kind of
character. That is more than, that's more than a notion. I mean, that's serious. Yeah.
Right. And people have this idea that, that Texas is this, like, you know, a Wild West place. And that's very much a myth for most, I mean, for, like, 99.9% of Texans, like, aren't hanging out with horses. but my reality growing up was in very much Texas ranching culture. It's, my family has ranched there since the early 1800s. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And so on the same land, and that's, I grew up on it. My parents are actually the family members that operate it also. And so I didn't have... not in an environment where I had any kind of out, I didn't know an out LGBT person until college. And so I certainly didn't know anyone in ministry. And so it wasn't until, even though I was already in seminary and then came out in seminary, which I think is very significant because it was my own kind of theological awakening that allowed me to love myself, which we can get into, but it was, it was meeting an out LGBT person in ministry who was very much at peace with who they were, for her as a lesbian woman, serving in ministry, doing specific work of nurturing future pastors that she was so called to. And so seeing someone embody that was the first time I had any kind of model for what ministry could look like as a queer person. And so... that was really significant for me and was significant in shaping how I framed my own ministry, knowing that, like you said in your lovely introduction, I was the first out person in the PCUSA to be ordained in Texas, which was a beautiful experience. It was hard at times, but it was beautiful. And there were so many people before me who weren't able to be public because they would have lost their careers. And that's not insignificant. But it was, it became important to me to be able to speak publicly about why this work is important and why being LGBT is not insignificant. I really cringe anytime someone says, oh, well, I just, or they just happen to be gay. Like this kind of dismissive approach. And it's like, well, you know, when you're, you know, a bisexual youth in some small town, it feels like the most significant thing in the world to you because you don't know what to do with it, maybe, and you haven't heard anything really radically affirming. And so it's important for me to be public and to talk about it from a place of faith. And I've talked a lot, but that's
great.
That's a little bit about why I do the work that I do.
And thank you. And Jen, you had mentioned before we came on about the Tony Campolo statement, and I'm wondering if Jen, if you could talk a little bit about that and the significance of that in this conversation.
Sure. You know, John Russell was talking about how he grew up in rural Texas, and I'm not sure if you mentioned this, John Russell, but you also grew up evangelical in rural Texas, which is... And, you know, that's a culture in unto its own. And, you know, I have certainly seen over the time that I have sort of walked amongst both mainline and evangelical Christians a move towards inclusiveness and welcome, particularly among younger evangelical Christians, for whom just I think similarly like younger folks in American culture, the issue of sexual orientation and gender identity is less of an issue than mm-hmm. it is for their parents or their grandparents, certainly. Mm. And Tony is probably your grandparents' age, John Russell. Mm. So, mm-hmm. you know, and I've known Tony a long time. He's a good person. I know that he has really struggled with this issue. I remember talking to him about this, 10 years ago. And and him saying flat out that his wife was there, but he wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so it was really interesting for me today to pick up and start looking on Facebook before I came on the air tonight and see this post by Tony talking about welcoming and being in support of same sex, same gender marriage, same gender yeah. loving couples. And I can understand, I mean, one of the things that we talked a little bit about is that in so many circles in the Christian community, we've moved on from that point. But in so many other Christian communities, they haven't even gotten there to where Tony is. So I'm curious, John Russell, from where you sit, how this sits with you. And before I let you answer, so hold that question in your mind, I'm going to give mm-hmm. our guest call-in number again. That number is area code 646-716-9397. 646-716-9397. And you are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. So I gave you a minute to think about it. How do you feel about Tony sort of coming out as being in support of same sex, same gender loving unions?
Yeah, I think, thinking back to, like you brought up that I straddled two worlds growing up. I went to a Presbyterian church with my family, and that was where my membership was. But where I grew up, being Southern Baptist is definitely in the water. All of my friends were either Southern Baptist or Pentecostal, yeah. or charismatic evangelical, and all of them. Like, there were no Presbyterians, really, but a small core of us. And I went to the Presbyterian church I grew up in is one of those, like, little idyllic, loving, small rural churches that really is doing incredible ministry where it is. But on broader justice issues, is very kind of moderate and often quieter. So that didn't really hold, which is part of the work that I do now in kind of as a part of the larger welcoming church movement. I really feel passionately about that because I think explicit affirmation and celebration of people is very different than kind of a quiet live and let live situation. Because I grew up also attending the Southern Baptist Church youth group and believing all of that and being saved and going on mission trips and so Southern Baptist spoke with so much more confidence about who Jesus was, you know, than the Presbyterian.
That's right. True.
And so it really stuck with me and it informed some amazing convictions that I still hold. And so while I don't identify with a kind of capital E evangelical church now, and the Presbyterian church definitely became my home, even more so as I went to a Presbyterian university and then seminary and did a volunteer program in the Presbyterian church. So that really became my, as I came into my own faith, it ended up being the place that I felt most comfortable was in the Presbyterian church. But what I have learned, and watching, you know, I'm friends with Matthew Vines and some others that are very much a part of this public evangelical conversation around really struggling with same-sex marriage. What I love about it is the same thing that I love about being from a ranch in Texas, is those are my people. And so for evangelicals, those are your people. And it's so important, I think, to have people like Tony Campbello speak out, because I can't speak to those communities the same way that he can. I don't share the same language anymore. It's not as authentic for me to go into a church that's evangelical and do a workshop and trying to convince them that Tony can say with such grace and a kind of hospitality in a way that I'm not able to, because it's not my community. And so on a familial level, I get it. And I respect, you know, I respect where people are. And I really want us to, and as I say all of this, there's disappointment underneath it. I want us to get to a place where kind of what we call the mainline church and the evangelical church can start kind of speaking again, or not that we're not speaking now, but where it doesn't feel like we're so far apart. And I hope that people who are more in the place that I am don't write off evangelicals and say, oh, we're so far beyond that. I don't want that. And then yet I do think we're also doing some really important work. And so it's complicated. And I'm really grateful because I know that people listen to him and he's going to give some grandparents the permission that they needed
to love their grandchildren. Right. Absolutely.
And now it's going to click for them. Because it will fall into place. And like, thanks be to God for that. So amen.
Yes.
Right. So I think, I really appreciate your kind and thoughtful words, because I think, you know, it, for a lot of us, we would love to see Tony go farther. Mm-hmm. But I certainly know a number of folks in his generation that are not nearly there, are struggling with having gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer children and grandchildren, and just trying to, you know, figure it out and reconcile that with their faith as faithful people.
You just made me think of a conversation I was having earlier with my partner, which is a little bit of a turn, but I think it's really a similar thing. We were talking about Caitlyn Jenner's coming out and being kind of revealed on the cover of Vanity Fair, and then the backlash that has come from some far left feminists around Caitlyn's presentation of womanhood, which is very feminine. And that idea that, oh, no, we're trying to break down the gender binary. And personally, you know, I hate the gender binary. And so I get that. But I wanted to, you were talking about how important it is to allow people to do different work that, you know, like Caitlyn Jenner, she is able, because of her name recognition and her new name recognition, she's able to open up people to ideas about gender and transition and what it means to be trans. People who are never going to listen to maybe feminists that are writing to the far left. And so to be able to hold the tension of often being frustrated, you know, I mean, I'm sure if I read everything Tony Campbello writes, then there will be things that, you know, frustrate me. But to know that there's not this zero sum situation, like, we believe in a God of abundance, and we can all be doing ministry and mission and working with different communities and moving towards the reconciliation of the world, and it can look very different. And I think that's a claim of faith for me, and that I'm saying to myself as I remind myself when I do get frustrated that everyone's not, you know, as radical as I want them to be, that people are just in such different places and their hearts open in such different ways. So
I have to say, you know, we are a show that talks about, you know, issues at the crossroads of Christianity and culture. And I was absolutely fascinated. I don't know if either of you read the piece by a young man who was a pastor to Bruce.
Oh, and I did. Yeah.
And their family. And and I found that really good and actually very, very helpful. If I'm going to talk to somebody in my church at the Fox Valley Presbyterian Church in Geneva, Illinois, about issues around particularly transgendered issues, I mean, it's so easy to say, oh, well, you know, they're, you know, these people are not of God. They're not, you know, and just kind of dismiss them. But I really found that my friend Rick Hudgens in downtown Chicago had posted that to a conversation that was, you know, in response to the feminist critique of the Vanity Fair cover. And that was in the New York Times on Sunday. So, you know, this is the stream that I've been sort of, you know, reading and reading tweets and following on Facebook. And Rick said, so for all of the Christians on this who might be reading this, you should read this. And it was from an evangelical pastor of a church in Calabasas, California. And, you know, he was extremely loving and compassionate and says, you know what? Caitlyn Jenner knows Jesus. And again, sort of that language that like, you know, when you're in the evangelical community, what it means to know Jesus, like she knows Jesus. So, and to speak from that space of more conservative Christianity and say, you know, I love this person. I know this person. And and I know that God loves this person is really pretty, it was pretty amazing to me to read that.
And the other thing that I read it also, and the music minister also named that he saw Jesus in Caitlyn, like that Caitlyn was, he talked about Caitlyn being Jesus to him, which was a very bold and faithful theological claim that I think for this, you know, I think it was a music minister, this evangelical music minister to say, you know, this trans woman was Jesus to me is really powerful.
Whoa,
and beautiful.
I know.
Yeah, it was, I loved it.
Yeah, he's a rock star. I mean, it was just, gosh, I mean,
And I'm glad oh yeah, go ahead, Jen.
That's all. I was going to just give our call-in number again. If anyone wants to call in, the number is 646-716-9397, 646-716-9397. You're listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen Rebecca with our special guest, Reverend John Russell Stanger, who's the Executive Director of Parity in New York City. Rebecca, you were saying?
Thanks, Jen, and I'm glad that you brought up the Caitlyn Jenner story and all of this, because I think it's really easy for me sometimes to separate these social and cultural issues from what's happening in the church, because the church has turned away and run off so many people who relate to these social and cultural issues. And so I appreciate you bringing, both of you bringing that into, you know, this faith idea and this, you know, place where, in fact, you know, even though Caitlyn Jenner's story was not, aligned with any kind of faith or spirituality that I know of, but that in fact everything we do is spiritual and has a faith element anyway. So I appreciate that. And Don Russell, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, or if you could talk to us a little bit about this really amazing documentary that you're a part of. And I'm going to let you introduce it, but I just want to say that I think, you know, that your work in this is really important and really, and again, what you said earlier about being public is very courageous and is also very necessary. And so I just want to lift up your work and then how this has been, how this called you not only to ministry, but to do things like this amazing documentary. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, the documentary is called Out of Order. And if you go to outoforderdoc.com, so as in documentary, so outoforderdoc.com, you can watch, there's a message from the director and you can find the trailer. I'm sorry, we're not allowed to say trailer, it's a teaser because the film is being edited, which means then a trailer can exist once they kind of know the story that will take shape in the editing room. But yeah, so it was filmed over the last 3 years. and it was a really, it was interesting. I was kind of on the sidelines. It was a lot of my friends. I was an intern at Parody when it first began. And the main story was around Mika, who was the executive director then, and my mentor and colleague and friend. And it was this British director who's a Jewish lesbian who was fascinated with kind of the American religious landscape and the fact that there would be these very churchy in some ways LGBT people who were doing ministry and wanted to be ordained and wanted to talk about Jesus. I think that's what was so strange to her. We really wanted to talk about Jesus. We weren't like these secular. Like, we love Jesus, and we would talk to her about it, and she was just like, I don't get it, but I think you're amazing. The film crew are these great, like, radical queers from Brooklyn, and that's one of the most amazing things. I'll talk more about the actual film, but it was such a beautiful experience of evangelism, and we were working with a not faith-based film crew, you know, in the way that we could talk about it. And they got to be a part of our little world and see why the gospel and why sharing good news with people who have been hurt was so important to us and had been healing for us. And so that's been one of the most amazing experiences. And so it follows about, there's kind of
how many
maybe
are
a half
in
dozen.
The show? Yeah, half a dozen.
Yeah, I would say half a dozen because they've kind of people have crept in as they felt. It was meant to be three in the beginning, and it expanded over time. And so they came to me. Yeah, so I was like holding light reflectors for interviews 2 years ago, and then a year ago they said, okay, we would really like to interview you. And I said, that's great. And I said, there have been plenty of like white gay males who have told their stories. And even, a lot of out pastors, outside of the PCOS, they have been white gay males. I said, but what I have never seen is people like my parents, who are these like, hello, welcome to the ranch. We're happy to have you, like these very Texan Southern drawl cattle ranchers,
right? Yeah, like ranchers, land. Like real honest to God ranchers.
Yeah, like this is their livelihood.
Right.
And who love and are proud of their publicly gay, Presbyterian pastor child. If you will come to the ranch and film them, I think that's where the story is. And through that, I did my interviews and stuff. But that's what I'm so excited about now, not selfishly, because what I said, and my mother in particular, I think was, what? Look, what do you want me to do?
You want us to do what? Yeah. John Russell, what are you getting us into?
and I talked to her about, I said, you know how, you know, she didn't know when I was growing up, but part of my coming out process was telling them how isolated I felt and just alone and not having heard of anyone like me, you know, before I had words to put to what it was that I was experiencing. And I said, imagine what it could do if someone somewhere sees this and you look and sound like their parents, and they are afraid to tell their parents because they've been told that, you know, because there's this narrative in our country that there's these like backwoods folks who sound like my parents, who are conservative and Bible beaten and aren't going to love their, you know, LGBT children. And I said, like, you are only you can break that narrative, because by being authentically yourself and talking about our journey together as a family, like that is gonna, I can't wait for that aspect of it.
No, I was just going to say, that's just amazing.
Yeah. So I'm married, and my pastor from growing up also filmed for it. And so that's really exciting. So it's going to tell this breadth of stories. And so one of my best friends in the world, Alex McNeil, who is the executive director of More Light Presbyterians and is also in the ordination process, he is the first trans person to run a mainline organization. And he is seeking ordination in Western North Carolina.
Woo!
Had a really lovely experience also. I don't want to speak for his experience, but has also had a story that needs to be told, and that it really breaks down these narratives of, you know, Southerners, and that's an important one for us to break down, that like Southerners and rural folk and agricultural folk like can't be affirming, and I think we're people who are saying no, like that hasn't been our experience. And I try to remember that as someone who's now in New York City and has been for the last 2 years, and often hear people say, oh, you're from Texas, like that. And then, you know, and then we have things like we, you know, have been aware of this week with police brutality, which is all over this country. But there's a way that we latch on to things like that when they're in the South, and we kind of point and say, look, you know. And I think around LGBT stuff, that's really important to end the stereotype.
No, that's fantastic. I mean, it's amazing that you had the breadth of understanding, John Russell, to say, you know, you don't really need to talk to me. You should really talk to my folks, because they're pretty incredible. You know, I'm so convinced and convicted that as more people are willing and able safely to come out to their family, to their friends, to their communities, that we see the face of our LGBTQ brothers and sisters across the board in, you know, every social strata and every color and race and rural communities and urban communities, that as people are finding their voice and coming out, that more and more people are able to say, wow, you know, I never knew that I knew a person who was gay or lesbian. I never knew that I knew someone who was transgendered or identifies as otherly gendered than male or men or women. And I know that for my parents, who are in their 80s in Western Pennsylvania, which is part of Pennsylvania that our friends refer to as the Alabama section of Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh and Philadelphia with Alabama in the middle. And they do that. And, you know, as sort of this affront to, because, you know, folks in Alabama are hicks and blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, and so, you know, you don't have to be from Texas in order to be, you know, termed a hick. But, you know, my folks' attitudes changed towards gays and lesbians when my nieces, their granddaughters, best friend, who she had grown up with her entire life, came out as gay in college. And my parents actually had to wrestle with, we don't understand this, but we love Patrick. So there. And they, you know, their love for Patrick was more, was stronger than their lack of understanding.
Right.
And I was really proud of them. You know, they just lived in a, and have lived in a time that they don't know that they know people who are, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, or queer. They just don't know that they don't know that they know them. And of course they do, but
Well, and I think that's such a big part too of, you know, John, with what you were saying about the South and maybe even particularly not just the South, but small towns or rural areas where there frankly just aren't as many people. And so, you know, we think that, you know, in these small towns, that everyone is the same. I mean, I certainly grew up in that environment, and in fact, I went to a wedding this past weekend in North Carolina, where I'm from. You know, where I mean, when you tell people you live in New York, you might as well say Mars, because because the people in those communities, very commonly, and I'm not trying to overgeneralize, or even, you know, I'm not saying this as a criticism, but but what's common in communities is that people don't generally don't leave, and so, you know, we have this. I have a view of small communities in which, people feel that or have an illusion that, that everyone there in that small community is the same. And, you know, because there aren't as many people, you know, if you have a small, let's say a small high school, you know, there are going to be fewer, you know, and you have a child who identifies LGBTQ or, you know, then you're, that person is going to, it's just going to have fewer options.
Yeah. Just by sheer numbers, by percentages of the population.
Right. That they would be able to relate to. And so John Russell, I would, if you don't mind, love for you to, you've sort of talked about this a little bit, but I would love to just hear about your experience. First of all, with your parents talking in the documentary, that must have been very powerful for them. And, you know, and your experience with dealing with people in your community. What happens when you go home? What happens when you go to church in your hometown? That kind of thing. What is your experience in that regard?
John Russell, I'm going to give you a minute to think about that.
Okay, well, I heard you're
going to
share a number.
You think? I'm going to remind people we have 15 minutes left. You are listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. We are here live tonight with Reverend John Russell Stanger, who's the Executive Director of Parity. And if you would like to join our conversation, you have something to add, you would like to learn more about what we're talking about, please give us a call. The call-in number is area code 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. Go.
I think that this conversation, we could do another hour on it, because I think this is a much as you're all naming, this is a much bigger conversation than about LGBT identity, which is this conversation about small communities. And I think we're getting to a place in the church where we're really getting to this, and we're saying, oh, what does it mean to do these different kinds of communities of faith that really are smaller and intend to be smaller, and that like the goal is not growth. And so while we're in a country that's becoming increasingly urbanized, like, what does that mean for us spiritually? Because I am coming from a family, you know, I was very aware in seminary when we would start talking about, like, you know, agrarian biblical cultures and land, like, I had a very different relationship to those conversations growing up in an agricultural family, and it's a very spiritual identity. And so this is, you know, aside from any LGBT stuff, like, that is, I think, a crucial question for us as people of faith in this country around, you know, creation care and what it, and when we, as we, as there become fewer people in rural areas, like, what does that mean? Because, and so to get to your question specifically about my own experience, like, I don't think small communities are the problem. And so that's part of what I wanted to show with inviting my parents to be a part of the documentary. And I actually haven't seen, I was intentionally not present during their interview. So that we filmed stuff together, just like literally feeding cattle. and having dinner and that kind of thing. But but they interview, I knew that they would feel more free if I wasn't around. So I am like, I cannot wait. And I know I'm going to cry the whole time when I see them speak. And that was the one point in my interview, the thing that got me, totally caught me off guard, and I got choked up, was when I realized that I wished I would have come out to them sooner, you know? But going back for me, you know, it's complicated. I don't want to paint it as like rural America will save us. Because I have family members, like I said, you know, not everyone in my context is moderate Presbyterians. I have family members who don't quite know what to do with me. And so there's like avoidance of my work and of my, you know, partnership. And so that exists. But, you know, there's nothing like the like affirmation and that feeling of being seen by the people who saw you before you even had long-term memory. Like, there's something about that like they've seen the breadth of your life. And, you know, there's this, a lot of people talk about coming out as inviting in. I had an experience with my family is when I, you know, invited them into a deeper understanding of what I had been going through with my whole childhood and then in college without them knowing. We became so much closer after I came out because
that is an incredibly powerful thing. I mean, I have not, amazingly enough, I have not heard the term, rather than coming out, inviting in.
There's a great, if you just Google, I would do it now or I'll get distracted, but if you Google inviting in, there was a great article that someone else wrote about this, and it has just a shifting of what it means. And that was my experience when I invited them in and we really revisited my life together. It was very painful. But we have, so there's this closeness there. And this is what I think there's a similar thing that happens in churches. And I work with a lot of, you know, these like proudly progressive, you know, Northeastern churches who are scared of Christian language and they want to be reaching out to LGBT youth. And I tell them one of the most important things you can do is use the language of your faith and like claim that. I said a nice parallel is that kind of reconciliation between someone and a family member. Like, you can process that relationship, whatever the estrangement is, you can process it with your therapist and with your pastor. And reach some sense of peace about it, but nothing's ever going to feel like what it could if the two of you sit down and truly reach reconciliation. Like, that is what the church can offer LGBT youth, because we are the ones who have most often hurt them. And so,
right.
So when I go home, I really have that feeling of that reconciliation, but then mixed in with some look. I mean, I have a nose ring, and which is no one, you know, it's not a thing.
Yeah, no.
Brazoria, Texas. Yeah. Certainly not men. And so,
right.
When I go to church, it's always the old church ladies who are so thrilled to see you. And like that doesn't change, you know? And so,
yeah.
And it's so authentic, you know, and it's my people.
Yeah.
And so, but it's complicated. And so because of all of that, I want to go back. You know, I do not plan to be in New York my whole life. I work with an amazing organization and get to do incredibly unique ministry. And I've learned so much here. And we're kind of going to new heights right now. And I'm excited about that, but I cannot wait, to see what a decade down the road, what could happen in places like Brazoria, Texas, with communities of faith
I was just going to say, John Russell, as I mentioned, my parents are in their mid-80s and they've had some failing health this spring. And so I've been back and forth to the Valley more in the last 6 months than I have in probably the previous 6 years. So, you know, I just go back and I was spending more and more time with my folks and more time in that community. And whereas I think from the time that I left, I really felt like an outsider, like I don't belong here. I'm very different from these people. And what I have reclaimed, I think in large measure, is a feeling that, we will never agree on everything, but these are my people. And these are the folks that I come from. And these are the people that I need to be in conversation with. And the people at my church, I've preached there twice and I preach the gospel as I understand the gospel, and they love me because I'm one of them. Not because of what I said, but just because I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And that is an incredibly beautiful gift that our small communities can give to those of us who grow up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's important to acknowledge that, you know, John Russell, from what I hear from what you're saying about, both of you referred to, where you grew up as your people, and I certainly have that same feeling too. And I think sometimes I wonder, and because I'm still in seminary, I get to cop out of this conversation and say I don't know, but I wonder if that's my call to ministry, is to like sort of leave the nest and, see the world, seek my fortune, whatever you want to call it, to then be able to go home and use this language that I grew up with and this culture and life that I understand to minister. And John Russell, I'm just curious, and I'm wondering if you can talk about that experience and how you feel that, your desire to go back there someday, comes from your upbringing and your ties in that community, but also from what you've learned outside of that community.
And do that in 2 minutes or less.
I was noticing that. I think I had to go away. I mean, I think that it was always going to be true that I left. I didn't know it was to New York. That was definitely a call that I did not see coming. But because what it's allowed, that space has allowed for healing, because there was so much. There was so much fear that I still had, like, in my body from experiences growing up around, like, violent bullying and that kind of stuff. And so there was still like this real fear when I would go back, and then just discomfort. But, and then also mixed with, I think, and maybe this was a way of kind of surviving, and getting out. But if I were to speak from a confessional place, there was this sense of superiority at times. Like I had gotten out, I had gone and went to college, and then I went to, I got a master's, and you know, and along with the fear that has dropped away also, like it's just, I'm in a more vulnerable place and a more honest place around. Absolutely. And that's what, if there's something I could lift up about these small communities, it's that, and I think this is the, to go, to bring it back around to Tony, you know, there's an authenticity to, to having conversations and speaking to your own people. And so when people in Brazoria, Texas love LGBT people, it has become with some real work. You know, they're not in an environment where they get points for doing it.
Or it has come at some real sacrifice.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And that's what my parents had to, they kept reminding me, we have had to deal with our own stuff too. And at first I didn't want to hear that. But now, oh my gosh, they have. Like, they were the people with the gay son, you know? And so I definitely am feeling called back, because what cannot happen is that these communities get left behind, because queer kids are still being born into them also. Like, this is the idea that, like, we, and it's a faith claim, like, right? Like no one is outside of the siblinghood that we have and that we know in Jesus Christ. Like no one is outside of that. And so I cannot run from it.
Right.
End of story.
Yeah. No. Beautiful. Amen. Amen, brother. And this is, you know, this show goes out to tonight to all of those folks, many of whom I know, who grew up in small towns, mine and others, who have struggled with their identity and have struggled with feeling loved and feeling a part of family. And we, you know, our prayers go out to them and to their families, that there would be reconciliation and understanding, and that we will continue to just love folks to Jesus and love folks to reconciliation. Because you know what, John Russell Stanger, we love you. And this has been so much fun. So thank you, thank you, thank you for being on the show tonight. As we wind down, I just want to remind everybody that we are here live on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, not to leave our friends out in Mountain Time, and always available on iTunes and in our archive gallery as part of the Life Coach Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening to Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. You're always welcome to join us, like our Facebook page, which is also called Spiritually Speaking with Reverend Jen and Rebecca. And that way you can be brought up to speed. We'd love to know what you think of our shows. If you're listening to this in archive and you want to give us a question or a comment, please feel free to post it there. You can also reach us through Twitter. I'm at Coach Rev Jen on Twitter. And Rebecca? You are at
a new Rebecca, A-N-E-W-R-E-V-E-C-C-A. And John Russell, do you want to open up communication if people want to tweet you or get in touch with you?
Yes. And the easiest way is through Twitter. It's at Rev John Russell.
Great. J-O-H-N-R-U.
Yeah, sorry. So R-E-V. Yeah. R-E-V. J-O-H-N-R-U-S-S-E-L-L.
Great. Thank you so much, John Russell. You're amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. It has been a blessing to me tonight. I hope this has been a blessing to all of you. Good night and have a great week. God bless you.
God bless. Hello.